are bound to each other's hearts, caught, torn, and pulled apart. This love is like wildfire, and to my word now I'll be true. Can't stop this breaking loose. This love is like wildfire, like wildfire.
What it is, everybody. Welcome to episode 31 of Fish and Connoisseur a Movie. My name's David Pether, but you can call me Fish. With me, as always, is my favorite sack of shit,
Connor McDuff!
Now, Connor, we've been fucked again this week. We've been rightly fucked.
We got absolutely fucked this week. It's ridiculous.
As you might have remembered, the people out there who listened to last week's episode, we were expecting to review the new Hot Tub Time Machine film.
And yep.
I was quite excited. That was kind of the only movie that I really wanted to see that came out this week. But the other film that came out was that new Nicholas Sparks thing. Longest Yard. I keep going to that. A much better film. But the longest Ride. And the universe just decided, you know what? You did the best of me, Fish and Connor. So fuck you. You can do every Nicholas Sparks movie that gets released. We're just going to not have Hot Tub Time Machine 2 get a cinema release anywhere near us. I couldn't find it anywhere, and I'm in fucking Melbourne.
Me neither. I could not find it. It was not playing at all anywhere. I didn't understand why. Why did we see this?
I don't know. I hope this isn't going to be a fucking pattern. But listen, so we'll get onto that one a little bit later. We'll go in depth and probably rip it to shreds like we did with The Best of Me.
That's it.
But Connor, you've been quite busy, haven't you?
Yeah, I've been pretty hectic. I've done lots of uni work, lots of all sorts of nonsense that isn't fun and doesn't let me watch movies, but I did see something last night.
What did you see?
I saw Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
Ah, sweet.
The ultimate film for breakups, because it is just so dead on. Like, I was watching it and I was like, holy shit, this film is just brilliant. It is just great. Oh, man.
That's so funny. I was just thinking about Forgetting Sarah Marshall. I was, over the last few nights, I've been a bit crook. I've got a bit of a fever and waking up in shivers and sweats and all that sort of bullshit. So it's been lots of fun. But I was sitting in bed with my girlfriend Beck, and you know that bit Paul Rudd goes when what is it? Russell Brand comes up to him and he speaks in his accent. And he's like, "You sound like you're from London Town." somehow got in my head in my fucking delirious state, and I was just like saying it over and over. You're sound like you're from London Town.
When life gives you lemons, just say fuck the lemons and bail.
Yeah.
Such a great film.
It's just one of those, you know, you're exactly right. Any guy who's kind of been through a breakup and, you know, trying to get over that girl can totally relate with that shit. And it's just, yeah, spot on.
It's really good. I really like that film.
I'm missing films like that, you know, that come out, what, like 2006, 2007,
2008-ish? 2008, I believe.
And, like, you know, there was such a good array of that kind of film around that time. You had your Superbads and your Knocked Ups and all that.
Shot Up a Tail, yeah.
Yeah, and it's not happening as much anymore, which makes me sad every day.
And when it does, it's nowhere near as good.
No.
Not as it was, sadly.
Yeah. Well, like I said, because I've been a bit sick, I've just been fucking chilling on the couch and becoming acquainted with my good friend Netflix.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of the exact opposite to you. I've just been watching way too much.
Oh, shit.
like, I've still been busy, but I've had time to fit that shit in. And I won't go into everything that I've been watching, but... you know, the highlights have been I've started watching the IT Crowd.
Yeah, great show.
Which I'd seen like an episode or two here, but I never really got hooked on it. But this, for some reason, just the accessibility to it has really made me binge that shit.
Yeah,
I did the first two seasons in one sitting sort of thing. They are only 6 episodes a season, and they're 20-minute episodes, so it's not really that big a feat, but still.
Great show.
And I've also been watching another a Netflix original called Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. Have you heard of that one?
Yeah, I really want to start watching it. It looks really good.
Yeah, it's very light. It's one of those, like last night I couldn't sleep, so I came out and watched 3 episodes of Kimmy Schmidt. And it's that sort of thing. When you want to just turn off and watch it, it's perfect. I found in the first few episodes they haven't really cemented their style of comedy. There's a few jokes that kind of come out of left field. They're really funny, but they haven't fit with what the rest of it's been doing. But still really cool in the same, like that, the lead chick is just fucking so charming. So it's hard not to like her.
She's very peppy.
Yeah. Yeah. I like how positive she is about everything. Mm. And for people who don't know that, Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt is about a group of girls who were kept in a bunker by a false preacher for 15 years, and they've only just come out this year, and she's decided she wants to, you know, live in New York, and it's kind of like a fish out of water thing. But it's fun because it's not like your typical one where, you know, you blast from the past or whatever, where it's, you know, he was from the 50s or something like that. She's literally only 15 years, but it...
Yeah.
It's a nice commentary on how far we've advanced in that 15 years. So yeah. I find it quite enjoyable. But
yeah,
the big one.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Sorry. No. I was just going to say it looks really good. Like, it looks like great fun, that show.
Yeah. Highly recommend it. But the big daddy of the Netflix originals that I'm fucking loving at the moment is Daredevil.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I'm a Daredevil fan. And, Coming into this one, it's so fucking dark. It's like super violent, super dark. It has like a bit of a Fight Club feel about it. The fight scenes are fantastic. I've only watched the first two episodes, I think, but he hasn't got the Daredevil outfit yet, which I'm waiting for because he's just got that stupid black mask on. But it's fucking awesome. It's a nice change from the light versions of these superheroes that we're getting. It's going more into Dark Knight territory.
Yeah.
Do you know, is it set in the Marvel Universe?
Could imagine so.
Because I think it's set after Avengers, because they keep talking about New York getting destroyed. It's like 2 years after New York, but they never actually say anything like about Iron Man or anything like that, which I...
Have a look.
I'm kind of enjoying that. But anyway, if you're a fan of those sort of things, if you're a fan of Daredevil full stop, you need to watch it.
It's set in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
So that's pretty cool. I like that. It's like its own thing though. It's like, yeah, it's kind of nice. And it's such a different style as well, which really works for it. Anyway, yeah, check that out if you are keen on that sort of stuff. And if you have Netflix, you may as well anyway, because you know, it's there.
It looks pretty good. I just, like, I have no interest anymore in, like, superhero stuff is just dead to me. And I was just not willing to give up my time to watch 13 1-hour episodes. So I just haven't.
To be honest, if it had been any other superhero, I probably wouldn't have. The only other one I would have been the Punisher, which I hope they do that. That'd be really cool.
The Punisher would be awesome.
It's worth a look maybe when you finish your assignments and shit.
After Friday, I'm pretty much free, and all I really want to do is play games and watch movies because Mortal Kombat's come out!
Yeah, fucking
yes! All I want to do is play that shit. Fuck.
Yeah, I was playing it last night. It's fantastic.
This is amazing as what I'm imagining.
I don't know how high expectations you do, but probably, most likely, you'd have to have some pretty fucking high expectations for it to disappoint you.
Is it like Mortal Kombat 9, or is it like Injustice?
It's a bit of a mix. It's a bit of a mix of the two.
Because my issue was that I didn't want it to be Injustice, I wanted it to be Mortal Kombat 9.
It definitely favors more Mortal Kombat.
That's all that matters. So,
yeah, and the story is really cool. I played maybe the first hour of it last night.
Excellent. Really enjoyed that. Man, I'm sorry, I just love Mortal Kombat. Back to movies, though.
Yeah. I just want to talk about one other film before we get into The Longest Ride.
Be my absolute guest.
I saw a lot of movies this week. I got some premiere tickets to a little horror film called It Follows. I tried to bring this up with you, Connor, because I didn't realize it was like a premiere screening. I was hoping it was going to be released so we could maybe review it instead of The Longest Ride. But it didn't. It was just like a preview screening. But it's getting around the traps at the moment. It's getting a lot of good press as a horror film. And basically the premise is there's this thing that follows you. No surprise there. But it can take on the shape of any person. For some reason it tends to take on naked people. It can use people you know against you and stuff like that. But the thing is it just walks for you. It never chases you. Well, it is chasing you, but in like the slowest pace ever. And so it's constantly walking towards you. And once it gets to you, it just fucks you up. Like in the opening scene, there's this one chick has like her leg bent back, you know, the wrong way over her face, and she's all kinds of fucked up. But it it's pretty full on. But the scary thing is it's kind of just always coming. So you can get in a plane and fly over the other side of the world, but it will keep coming. It'll walk through the fucking water and get to you eventually. So it's kind of terrifying in a sense there. And there's a few good jumps there. My problem with it was a bit slow at times. So I lost a bit of the tension, but when it was playing those cards right, it was fucking fantastic. And it's got kind of a Drive style soundtrack, so that, you know, 80s synth sort of thing. Which in some ways makes it even creepier. I don't know how, but it does. The only way to pass on this thing is to sleep with somebody, and if you sleep with them, then they attract the thing. But if he dies, it comes for you. So yeah.
So it's kind of like a chain.
Yeah, very much. It doesn't really go in to explain anything about what it is either, which in this movie actually really works. Sometimes I don't like that, but this one I like the mystery of it. If they do a sequel, I'm sure they will. It'll probably delve into that a little bit more.
That's hectic.
Yeah. I'm dancing between a 3 and a 2.5, because it didn't blow my mind, but it was it's definitely a standout for horror in cinema releases of late. So if you can track it down, horror fans out there, go check it out.
That sounds awesome. I actually kind of really want to see it.
Yeah, you'll shit your pants.
Shit my pants. So
I'd like to watch it with you to see if it does scare you, because there was a few moments, because I was in like a full cinema and there was like a lot of people jumping, and even a few where I was jumping, so it was, you know.
Fuck.
Hat off to that.
Fuck! Yeah, no, I'd be interested. I would like to, but I would need a bottle of vodka and like...
Yeah, nice.
I need methods of coping pretty quickly. Shall we kick on? Shall we kick on to the hit Nicholas Sparks film, The Longest Ride?
I think we should.
We absolutely should. And I believe you've prepared one earlier for us, Fish. I believe you've done us a plot synopsis written down.
I have.
Oh, my gosh. Fresh out of the oven.
All right. Kind of the bare bones, but there's a lot going on in this film actually, so it's quite a big one, so bear with me. Let's do this. Okay, in the opening scene, Luke Collins, a professional bull rider, has a terrible accident during one of his rides. Cut to a sorority house where a young girl is trying to pry Sophia away from her studies to attend a bull riding competition to pick up some hot cowboys. Reluctantly, Sophia...
Sorry. pick up some hot cowboys.
Well, that's exactly
what I know, it's just funny.
They actually say that.
I know.
They actually say that. Reluctantly, Sophia agrees, and they are there to witness Luke's return to the sport. Luke rides successfully, sparking his return to the top of the game, but while celebrating, the bull breaks away from the rodeo clowns and charges right for him. He quickly climbs the surrounding fence high enough to exceed the bull's reach, right in front of Sophia. He drops his hat in the process, and the bull is reined in. Luke returns to ground level. Sophia grabs his hat and calls out to him. Luke says she can keep it, much to the jealous envy of all the women sitting around her. Later that night in a bar at the after party, Luke meets up with Sophia again, but one of Sophia's friends has had too much to drink, and Sophia, being the responsible friend that she is, claims that she needs to take this drunk mess home, at which point Luke asks for her number. Over the next few days, Luke calls her over and over, but Sophia never picks up or returns his calls. She is worried about starting anything because in a month she will be moving to New York to start an internship at an art gallery. But Luke is persistent, and eventually Sophia folds and the two go on a lovely first date. But when Sophia reveals that she will be leaving town soon, the night's magic slightly sours. While taking Sophia home, Luke notices something off the side of the road. On closer inspection, an old man has driven his car through a guardrail and into a tree. Luke quickly pulls the elderly man out of the car. The man moans, "Box." That was box, by the way. And Sophia checks the car, finding a small box full of letters. At the emergency room, Sophia decides to wait around for the elderly man to come to. While sitting in the waiting room, she reads one of his letters. She discovers that his name is Ira, and these are all letters to his wife, Ruth. When Ira is conscious, Sophia returns the box to him. He claims he can't even read them anymore. His eyesight is getting so bad, so Sophia offers to read them to him. What follows is a jumping of time back and forward as Ira recites his relationship with his late wife, a foreign art lover who moved to his town, and he eventually wooed her. But in a terrible incident during the war, Ira was injured in a way that would prevent him from ever having children. This being a dream of Ruth to have a family put a spanner in the works, but they eventually work it out. And then we jump to the present, where Sophia and Luke's relationship is blossoming, but being from different sides of the track is making things difficult. Sophia is a sophisticated art major ready to move to the big city to kick off her career, whereas Luke is a rough and tough bull rider who wants to be number one in the world at one of the most dangerous sports of all. When Luke attends an art exhibit with Sophia, he can't understand what the big deal is, and when her boss asks him what he thought of it all, he replies, "There is more bullshit here than where I work." Luckily, the boss laughs it off, but Sophia doesn't take it so lightly, and the two have a tiff. Luke points out that they are so very different, and how would they ever make it work? And Sophia says that she's not sure, but she wants to make it work. At his next bull riding event, Luke is injured again. Sophia cancels her trip to New York and pulls out of her internship to be with him at the hospital, where the doctor advises Luke that he should give up the bull riding. Luke refuses to quit. He needs to be the best, and Sophia says that she can't be with somebody who every time he walks out the door, she will wonder if he is ever going to make it back. The elderly man, Ira, passes away, and his solicitor contacts both Sophia and Luke, requesting on behalf of Ira that they attend an auction where his wife's art collection will be sold off. On the night of the auction, Luke embarks on the biggest ride of his life to cement his number one bull rider status, or the longest ride. Nailing the ride, all he can think about when he is done is Sophia. So he rushes to the auction, getting there just in time to bid on the first painting, which is a special piece, a portrait of Ira's late wife by a child that the couple took on as their own, and Ruth told him that he could be anything he wanted. The child went on to be a professor of astrology and painted this portrait, which eventually found its way to Ira. Luke wins the painting for a relatively low bid, and at the same time wins Sophia back, when he tells her that he is done with bull riding. In a twist, it turns out that the painting that nobody wanted was the most important painting of all. Because it meant so much to Ira, the person who bought that painting would earn the entire collection. Months later, Luke and Sophia have used the painting to open a memorial gallery to Ira and his wife and live happily ever after. Fuck.
Good job. That was a mouthful. Now we don't have to explain the plot. Thank fucking God. Anyway, the bull riding sequences are what I first want to talk about because they looked fucking sick. They were cool. Holy shit.
No, I totally agree. I couldn't help but wish that this was a bull riding movie with a love story subplot rather than a love story with a bull riding subplot. You know what I mean?
Does it look cool as dicks? Like, oh my God, it was so awesome.
Yeah. I actually have quite an interest in bull riding. I find it really, like, you know, it's pretty fucked up that they...
Yeah.
You know, they...
Piss off a bunch of animals. Piss,
just to make them buck around for ages. But, like, there's something really cool about it at the same time. It's like, it's really fucking dangerous, as you see in this movie. Like, that first flip that he does in that first scene is crazy. It's crazy incredible. But I would have liked... Like, you could totally see that this movie had that story in it.
Yeah.
You know, it could have been just about him getting to be, you know, the best bull rider in the world and, you know, keep on getting injured and his girlfriend's like, nah, I want to go do art shit. Because, like, let's be honest, I really didn't care about her art career.
Nobody gave a shit.
Like, I guess, you know, it is a Nicholas Sparks film, so it's you know, marketed towards women. You know,
as bull riding. You can tell by the fact that the fucking protagonist was this skinny, small, bland girl, and the her love interest is this huge hunk of handsome. Sorry. Continue. Sorry.
Yeah. No. I have seen her before, though. She was in Under the Dome.
I haven't seen that. Apparently, it's awful.
Apparently. I didn't mind it. I've read the book, though, so I enjoyed the book.
Oh, okay.
But it's not nearly as good as the book. But, yeah, she's probably one of the strongest bits of that show and some of the not-so-strongest bits in this film.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. Like, the bull riding, it could have definitely been the sort of movie with a subplot, but it's a Nicholas Sparks film. It's all about the loving, you know?
Yeah.
But the bull riding sequences were just cool. They were very well done, and just very awesome to watch. Like, fuck, it was awesome. Really great. Mm. And now for the other positive I have, which is the Jewish couple in the past, Ira and Ruth.
Mm.
They were really lovely. I really admired their characters. They felt real to me. That was what I felt like would be. It was just a realistic take on two people who love each other that much. They had their problems. They respected each other. Their characters were flawed. But it wasn't bullshit. There was none of this nonsense sort of drama. You felt like it felt believable to me the whole way through. I was like, I can believe these characters. Indefinitely can I believe these characters.
Yeah, I thought the guy who played Ira was probably the best thing about this film.
I found
him really he did a very good job at his role. And she was okay as well. Her accent kind of annoyed me a little bit.
German accent.
But that is, I guess, her accent, so I can't really judge it too much. But I do agree. When watching it, I found that I was longing for her to go back to the, you know, for Sophia to go back to the emergency room to go back to that story, because I was finding it much more interesting than what was taking place in the real, in our world. But I will say this, though. I feel like I'm more forgiving of that period piece because of the fact that it is a period piece, and that was kind of, you know, with the war and all that sort of stuff, like, and baby boomers and like, that was a big, like, it feels okay for couples to be that way back in that time. Whereas if the guys were that way in the present, it doesn't feel real.
Yeah.
And that's not taking anything away from it. But ultimately, it does kind of go nowhere. the whole predicament is that Ira, you know, goes to war and gets shot and can't use his nads to make babies. Yeah. So, and Ruth's biggest, like when they, before he proposed to her, she was like, I need you to want a big family because that's what I've always wanted since I was a little girl. And so when he comes back and can't have babies, it's a bit harsh.
Yeah. Begins to decay their relationship.
Which I enjoyed. I liked the way that he just kind of avoided her because he felt ashamed. But then, you know, they eventually get married. It's all good. They buy a house. They, you know, they get an art collection because that's what Ruth is all about. Which is kind of really the only connection to the present stuff. But we'll get into that. And then she just, you know, then she breaks down and doesn't want to, pretty much can't do it anymore because she wants a baby. Goes away and then comes back. So it's not really a big deal.
No, it's not. And this is like my biggest issue with, well, one of many, is that this film fucking goes nowhere for like so long. This is a long film. I saw this at 9:30, so I felt that fucking length because I was out by midnight. This is a long film, and it just is full to the brim with just shit. Like,
yeah.
Like nothing fucking happens to anyone for almost the entire film. It could be cut down to so little. And it's so fucking annoying because I'm like, oh my god, do something! Like,
but the problem is when something does happen, it doesn't mean anything anyway. Like I said, the thing with Ira and Ruth with not being able to have a family, it's kind of just like, oh well, you know, I've got over it, I've come back and it's all good. Like I was expecting it to be, that was it, that's the last time he saw her, and you know, at the end of the movie there might be some sort of reunion with the two, which would have been nice. But even after Luke makes that joke about art being bullshit, and that was like, you know, actually at that point when he said that, that's the only point in this film that I truly got affected. I was kind of like, oh shit, no, he didn't say that.
Yeah,
you fucking idiot. Like I actually cared because I knew how big a deal it was. And then
I just thought that was such a dumb shit thing too. Like this character is clearly meant to be like great and he's got all these great traits. Who the fuck goes to an art gallery for their girlfriend who's trying to get to kickstart her career with a successful company and goes up to the boss and goes, oh yeah, it's fucking bullshit. Like, who does that?
No, see, I can totally picture that because of the fact that he is just, like, that's how I feel when I walk into an art gallery a lot of the time. I'm like, what the fuck is this shit? Like, it's just a bunch of splotches on a page. Art galleries actually scare me. There's something weird about art galleries that I don't like.
I think it's
I totally went with it. Like I wanted that to be more of a thing, like him to really question what all this shit was about and then eventually be turned around to the beauty of it all. I thought that's where they were going to go. And I thought that's what they were setting up there.
Yeah.
And I was kind of like, I was in it. I was like, this is cool. I like this. Because like you said, who the fuck says that? Like, yeah. You idiot. Like, but then when the boss just laughs it off and is kind of like, oh, keep this one. It's kind of like, oh, okay, well, that's all right. But then there's a little tiff between the two.
Then they have their first fight.
Yeah. Which, you know, oh, cool. There's still some hope that this is going to break down and going to be interesting, but they resolve it within 2 minutes.
And then they have their big fight and they don't want to talk for a little bit. Oh, no. Ah!
I think they do, don't they? They are talking straight after
they
that.
Do. I mean, I'm just saying they have another fucking fight when we find out that dickhead McGee can't ride anymore. She's like, whatever, I don't want to be with you. And you're like, wow, yeah, they're definitely not going to get back together. Fucking hell.
Which that whole, you know, sequence became redundant to me because of the fact that she you know, did she did say, hey, I want to be, you know, I want to make this work at that TIFF at the art gallery. Then she's going to New York. He gets injured. Yeah, it's, I understand she needs to be there for him in hospital. So, like, maybe postpone it.
Yeah, but don't then, cancel it.
Yeah, because she quit it, I feel that she's just there through thick and thin. Like, she should, I got the feeling that she understood his goals at that point. And, you know, even though it scared the shit out of her, I thought she was going to go with it. And then when, you know, she has a, you know, he's like, you know, because he's fucking true. He's so right. Anytime a bull rider goes into that cage, they can die. So what's the difference between a mild concussion and, like, I know there is a difference, but, like, you know what I mean? It's when I feel that she's accepted it by that point, and then just being a fucking pain in the ass to be a pain in the ass at that point.
I understand, like, where she's coming from. He's got, like, a fucking issue with his brain that increases his chances of dying, like, greatly if he's bull riding. Like, don't fucking do it. Do a new career, dickhead. Save yourself.
But after, you know, fully breaking off her career and, you know, committing to the long haul with him.
Yeah, no, you're right, though. Like, her, yeah, like, her, like, doing all that shit.
Like, I get it. I get her concerns. Like, absolutely. But it's just kind of like, well, it's not that simple.
Yeah.
Like, you would think that she would at least be there to support him, because that's the life that she chose. She doesn't have to agree with it. Like, the mum doesn't agree with it. Who's kind of a nothing character as well.
Yeah. Fucking weird face too. yeah. Just the weirdest looking human being. But no, you're right. Like, you're totally right. It's just so weird. It's just another fucking... Look, though, however, not as unenjoyable as The Best of Me, I found.
I can completely agree with you.
I found that this film had a little... sparked my interest a little more, I think, specifically because of the cool bull sequences and the flashbacks. I really enjoyed them. I really enjoyed the old school 1940s period stuff. I thought it was cool to watch.
No, I totally agree. I was 100% into the bull riding, 100%, yeah. and that carried the film for me. Like, I did feel its length, like you did, but I didn't see it at 9:30. I saw it at like midday or something like that. So it was all good. And I didn't particularly care about the main characters as much as I would have liked until the end. I felt they didn't mean anything until a lot later in the film. You know, when he gets injured again and all that sort of thing. But in that time, I was able to fill that gap with Ira and Ruth. But let's talk about the connection between the two, which was what I went in anticipating this film to be all about, was like that they almost shared the same
story.
Yeah. And it really has no connection.
Nothing. There's nothing there. Why is he even alive? She has his fucking letters. Just read them yourself. Fuck.
That's it. That's it, eh? And that might have been a nice little thing. Like, you know, she could have taken the box and Luke runs off to take this guy back to, you know, emergency ward, and she forgets that she took the box and has it at her house or, you know, whatever. It starts reading them, and that could have been a nice device. And then eventually she tracks down Ira and, yeah, or something like that. But just quickly, what about when they're at the emergency ward? They've just, you know, checked Ira in, and Sophia's like, oh, you know what? I'm going to wait with him, which is fine. But then why wouldn't Luke wait as well?
Yeah, what the fuck?
Like, you know, being the gentleman that he is, even after the bad news of her potentially moving away in a month, it's I feel that his character would have just, you know, flat out refused to leave if she's gonna stay. And I found that really strange. I understand.
It should have been more like it's like he just had cows to ride or some shit. Like, he was just like, yeah, right, see you, have a good one.
Yeah, maybe he waits around until the morning and, you know, he's still in the emergency ward, and then he's like, oh, I got to go. And then that way it sets up to have that one-on-one with Ira and Sophia. But yeah, so we're going back to that connection. I was waiting for it, And I thought that the you know, the appreciation for art between the two main female protagonists was going to be something. It only kind of is at the end, when they, you know, buy all of Ira's collection. But that's not enough. That's not enough.
Not at all.
I was actually really disappointed in that, because that was kind of what this movie was selling. And there, you know, it could have been like, even the trailer did it, you know, the trailer cut between the present two. And the past. So that's some bullshit.
Yeah, it was nothing there. It just goes back to nothing happens in this film. Like, the story's like, oh, the girl likes art, and then in the present, the girl likes art, and they have their differences and interests just like in the present, and it's all take it. No, like, fuck off. It's not similar. This is fucking stupid. Really stupid. I really didn't enjoy that lack of connection between the two. Like, in fact, should have just been a fucking story about Ira and Ruth, because, God, there was nothing interesting about these fucking dickhead characters in the present. Every time! They're so boring. I don't give a shit. So fucking bland. I like art. I knew it. As soon as I saw her, I said to Mel, I was like, oi, this character, classic white girl, skinny, blue eyes, blonde hair, Hitler's fucking godchild. And she's gonna be fucking like a whimsy bitch, and she's gonna rely on him for everything, but she's gonna have a little bit of independence and a little bit of attitude, just so female audiences, young females, can watch it and be like, yeah, I'm slightly independent as well. And then they connect more with the character. Whereas fuckhead, big boobed, muscle head, fucking extraordinaire is just this perfect human being, again, where he, like, is saving people from burning cars and riding fucking bulls and looking after his mum on the ranch and doing all this bullshit that, you just don't fucking, like, there's nothing. That character isn't flawed.
Yeah.
I hate it.
And that's the problem. And that's why it was so disappointing for me when they had the chance to make him flawed, by, you know, being totally disregarding the art community.
Yeah.
And then not doing it. And the other problem there with the stereotype of Sophia's character is they set her up as, like you said, an independent chick.
Yeah.
Who's all about her studies.
And they make her totally dependent.
Yeah, and that's exactly... And look, I get it. We all have times where, you know, a love interest comes into our busy life, and it's kind of like, well, you want to make it a go. You want to have a go. But I saw her character as such a strong character at the start, and so dedicated to her studies. Like, the opening scene with her is that other chick coming in and being like, come to the Cowboys. And and she's like, nah. Like, then she never, or rarely ever, studies again for the rest of the movie. And I was like, how does she have so much time to keep seeing Ira?
Yeah.
You're
right.
I could have gone with her getting wooed by Luke and just kind of going with that, because, you know, the power of love. But I don't know how she had the time to just go and sit and read letters. Like, I understand she's a good person and then she's doing it for him, but like,
it's a fucking arts course, man. There's nothing to study.
Yeah, true. So it's, yeah, my biggest disappointments are just, there's no lack of connection, and the every time that they go to, you know, fuck with a character, they just bring it on back.
That's it. Yeah, no, it's just, it's just so bland. It's just like Nicholas Sparks has thrown
used up.
Yeah.
They've used up his best stories.
They have. It's boring. It's just like, I know this story because it's just, it's fucking nothing. It's nothing.
One thing I did find interesting about this one was the lack of, like, big names. Like, sure enough, like, I don't know who he is, but I've seen her in one
thing. You know, it's Clint Eastwood's kid.
Holy shit. I was thinking that throughout. I was like, man, he looks like Clint Eastwood. Right. What's he been in? Has he been in something? I feel like I've seen him.
He has.
I don't know. Yeah. Anyway, okay. He's got a little bit of star power through his dad, I guess. But, like, you know, let's look at the last one we watched, Best of Me, that had fucking Cyclops.
John Marston or whatever his name is.
Yeah, yeah, and Michelle Monaghan, which are, you know, they're kind of, you know, people on the decline, but they're still
up pretty there, yeah.
They're names, you know. You go to see John Marston, you go to see shit like that. But it's this one, yeah, like I was, because they've always had a Channing Tatum or a Ryan Gosling, you know. So it was kind of. And you know what? I didn't mind. I didn't care. But it was just a different choice that I wasn't sure it would go that way.
Yeah. No. You're right. Like, this movie's just exists.
That's it.
And the fucking product placement. Oh my fucking god! That was Coca-Cola. Ridiculous.
It's Coke everywhere.
Buy Bud Light, guys. Just so you know.
It's like awkward too, because like the characters are always holding face out
directly towards the camera, like raising their glass and shit, and it's like, oh my god, buy Bud Light, woo, yeah. I was like, what the fuck, what the fuck is this, but well, yeah,
I don't know, should we put a bow on this one?
It's hard. I don't like. I'm looking at the time. We've been talking for 45 minutes, but this movie's fucking just, I don't know what to say. It's just so bland. It's nothing. Yeah, let's wrap it up.
All right, go for it.
Look, I had not the worst time watching this. The bull riding sequences were great. Ira and Ruth definitely had their moments. But overall, it's another bit of nonsense with more shitty characters and more nothing. It's just nothing there. There's nothing here at all. It's fucking boring. Nicholas Sparks, stop writing books. People, stop making them. You're not doing yourself any favors. It's fucking dumb. I give it... I gave Best of Me a 1, I'm pretty sure. I'm almost, I think
you did, yeah.
Best of Me was, so this is a 1.5.
Oh, wow. that's harsh.
That's it.
I thought you were going to be a little higher than that. I thought maybe a 2.
Oh, no, 2, it would be 2, you're right.
I feel kind of the same as you. I found it really hard to actually judge this film. In terms that I did quite like it. At times, I loved the bull riding aspect of it. I loved the locations. I liked his farm. I liked, you know, the contrast between the sorority and the farm. And I liked the bars they went to. I found them really fun. Like I'd love to go to a bar like that. I don't know if I could do line dancing, but like that would be a fucking fun thing to do. And I ultimately liked Ira and Ruth, but the lack of connection between them actually confused me, because I was waiting for something. I was waiting for that connection, that point in the film where it's like, ah, oh, okay, I see, it all connects. It doesn't.
No.
And that's just fucking bad. Like, I wonder if in the book it does. I fucking hope it does, because what is the point? Why do we have the two stories?
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
You could have had one or the other. Like you said, it could have just been an Ira film. Or, ultimately, I would have liked it to be a bull riding film with the love story subplot. Like, the performances weren't fucking horrible, but they weren't good, except for past Ira. He was something about him that really resonated with me. I just really liked him. But it's... Fuck, I'm not as harsh as you are, because like I found I did care. Like I said, there was that point when he says there's more bullshit here than where I work, that I actually was like, oh, fuck. No, he didn't. Waiting for it to take that next step. And it just didn't. I've been dancing between a 2.5 and a 3, but after this conversation, there's definitely more negative to say about it than positive.
Saucy.
And that's not just you. Like, I came in all guns firing, but it's a 2.5.
Yeah, nice. I see that.
Yeah.
I see that.
Yeah. So, next week, we have, there's two movies that we could do. We've got Paul Blart, More Cop 2.
Yeah.
Or one that I'm actually kind of interested in, but it is a romantic fantasy. It's called The Age of Adeline.
Isn't Avengers out?
No, that's the next week after that, which will 100% be that move. 23rd.
Oh,
yeah.
I thought it was out this week.
Nah, it's the 16th this week, and we've got Paul Blart, The Age of Adeline, and The Gunman. Actually, there's another good one that I wouldn't mind seeing, but I don't know if it'll get a wide release. It's called While We're Young. It's got Ben Stiller in it.
Oh.
And that looks cool.
Probably. I don't want to... Look, if we do comedies, these never go very long.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Let's. I think The Age of Adeline... Because have you seen the trailers to that?
No.
Well, it's basically this chick has some sort of fucking accident where she has eternal youth. She remains 29 years old for, like, her life. Like, she just stays that age. And I think there will be a lot more to talk about with that one than Paul Blart.
Okay, cool.
I'm really keen for Paul Blart, but I'm actually quite intrigued about Age of Adeline. It's not normally my bag, but the trailers look fantastic. You should look it up.
Will do, for sure.
But, all right, well, let's wrap this shit up. For all you lovely listeners out there, thank you for
tuning in
through the long tuning in. Please go out and share our stuff. We need to get it out there a little bit more. Our episodes are released every Wednesday. We're actually recording this one on a Wednesday because I've been sick and Connor's been busy as shit.
Fuck,
so,
yeah, love it.
I'll try and have it done by tonight, so we can still say that it came out on a Wednesday, but generally always on Wednesday. So come check out our iTunes feed, Fish and Connoisseur, a movie podcast. Check out our Facebook page. We need all the support we can, guys. And for our regulars out there, we love you.
We do. I love you all so much. Thank you once again for listening, guys. And if you want to see a reflection upon how we spoke about the last Nicholas Sparks film, I suggest listening to our Best of Me podcast, which is actually one of the first ones we did.
Yeah.
Very.
That was actually a fun. I did like that podcast. Going back over it because it was such a flawed movie that we just tore into it.
We did. It's a fun time. Sometimes, you know, there's less to talk about because a movie is just so meh, and this is one of those times. But I've had a great time as always. Fish has had a great time. I hope you've had a great time. Let me know if you need a cuddle. I'm always here for you. Have a good one. Play the music, Fish. And to my word now, I'll be true. I can't stop this. Breaking loose, this love is like wildfire. Thank you for listening to this episode of Fish and Connoisseur a Movie. Fish and Connoisseur a Movie does not own any rights to the film The Longest Ride, its marketing, or its soundtrack, and no infringement is intended. The track Wildfire is performed by C-Fret. You think you know all about it, then it seems you are wrong. She hit it out of the park before it had even begun. Oh!